Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 28th of March, recording at 9:36 p.m. and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, as you might notice, that's later than usual, and the reason for that is because I did my whole audio, and this is the big picture long-term outlook audio, because tomorrow is a holiday. And I found out afterwards, when I went to check it, that my recording little button here was on off rather than on. Well, it was stupid, and I should have seen it from the volume indicator, but I was concentrating on my copy, and so my fault. And apologies for the later audio. But there are a lot of interesting things to discuss, and I'll repeat that this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And there are a number of interesting things to mention. Now, hopefully I'm not losing my voice as well. I don't think so, but it might be a little bit scratchy. Now, first, there was an upside breakout of sorts here for the S&P 500 index today. And it actually closed at a new all-time high. Now, this is in nominal terms rather than inflation-adjusted terms. But nevertheless, it is certainly of emotional significance. And it's also indicative of what's happening here in global stock markets. But tonight, the S&P closed up over 6.5 points at 1569.19. Now that, as I say, is a new all-time closing numerical high. It is not the intraday high. That's up just over 1576, so only 7 points away. And I would say there's probably quite a good chance that that'll get taken out next week. Now, in the same vein, the Philippines, among the ASEAN indices, and also Indonesia, the JCI index, they both rallied to new all-time highs in here today. But the difference, those three patterns, the S&P pattern was a very tight, orderly consolidation. If you look at that on the charts, you'll see it. Whereas you have a more choppy, erratic, bit of choppy, erratic action by the Philippines and Indonesia. And they're also more overextended on higher valuations. And I suspect that they are in what is a sort of a ranging consolidation phase and a bit of additional mean reversion up here. Now, if we look at all stock markets, most of them show a clear loss of the uptrend consistencies that we saw developing really starting from mid-November last year and a little earlier in some instances, and carrying right through to the end of January for most stock market indices. And that was when I began to talk about the fact that we were now moving into a corrective phase, which I was hopeful would be consistent with an overall bull market environment, because we've certainly seen a good bull market here for most stock markets. And you can really go back to 2000 and beginning of 2009 for the start of that, against that background of considerable fear and with people making all kinds of apocalyptic forecasts. But let's stick with the present here for now, and then I'll go into the much longer term outlook that we do with these big picture audios. But what we do see is a fair amount of loss of uptrend consistency, obviously not with the S&P and the Philippines and Indonesia, but all of Europe we can put in that category. And Europe has had a bad week, and had a bad week last week due to the Cyprus banking problems overall. Now, that's caused a fair amount of short-term technical damage overall. And so we've seen for a number of those indices, we've seen some fairly large corrections. Europe remains very much the focal point of concern in terms of the global economy. Most of the rest of the world looks considerably firmer overall. Now, I feel overall, though, that this is still a normal corrective phase. In other words, you look at the number of stock markets that are up at any given on any given day or down on any given day, and it's mixed. It's not the all down or all up type of environment that we had seen previously, and more importantly, all down when we went into those corrective phases in earlier years when investors were extremely nervous overall. So we're getting a diverse performance that's much more consistent with the normal, healthy overall consolidations. Watch banks, because banks are so often a lead indicator. They may not lead by much, but as long as banks are doing at least as well as the broader stock market index, then I'm reasonably relaxed about what's taking place in those stock markets. On the other hand, if banks are underperforming, that is often a good lead indicator indicating vulnerability. You saw that most dramatically back in 2007, and the European Banks Index is underperforming here right now. Again, Cyprus has been a big factor in that, but that has helped to weigh on Europe and also China. And this is disappointing because China had a bad day in here today, and its banks are even softer. And so that suggests to me that we're going to get a medium-term corrective consolidation phase. I certainly don't think we're going back into a new bear market. I don't think that at all. I think the bear market's over. But we had a big run-up. Starting what was it last November or December, and I think we'll see a consolidation now of several months, and there's a fair amount of uncertainty whether they are able to reflate or not, and the overall conclusion is no, because they're concerned about higher property prices, and they're also concerned about the pollution problem overall. And we've got a new government in place, and therefore there's a fair amount of uncertainty here overall regarding China. I think if it pulls back further, that will create a good buying opportunity. I mean, you could say we have the buying opportunity right now in terms of the medium to longer term upside scope, but it's lost its form of the three recovery markets, the other two being the little one, more speculative one. Vietnam, very steady, looks like a huge multi-year base formation, and then the best one has been Japan, but that's having a well-earned rest and reactive phase here overall. Now, as I say, I think this corrective phase will go on for a little bit longer, and the number of markets that are still going up, like Indonesia and the Philippines, and most importantly of all, Wall Street, it's a shrinking list here overall. But I want to emphasize, I do not expect any, I certainly don't expect a bear market. I don't think that we're going to get a severe correction on Wall Street, and I think we'll get just some mean reversion towards the 200-day moving average. and that's no bad thing. Now, elsewhere around in terms of global markets, if we look at the bond markets, and bond markets have been relatively steady over the last 2 to 3 weeks, although we had a little bit of easing in here today in terms of bond prices, so the yields edged up here a little bit today. But they've had a good 2 to 3 weeks, as I say, given the increased nervousness that we've seen regarding Europe in particular. Now, investors, long-term investors in global bond markets, well, my hat's off to you. Congratulations, you've had an absolutely fantastic run. But the danger is that that fantastic environment lulls people into a false sense of security. And there's also a danger that it causes them to look for things that would support their case overall. And I would be cautious in that respect. It's time really to be at your most objective. And I would feel that it's the time to further lighten positions in those long-dated government bond markets, particularly in terms of the U.S. Treasury market. Now, we may get Japan bonds and we may get European bonds holding up, or just say bunds holding up better for longer because of the slower growth in those regions currently. But let's put it this way: 31 years to the upside and counting. Well, that ought to be ringing alarm bells as well. And I don't think we're going to see this flat economic period going on indefinitely. We know that we have seen a major credit crisis recession. And a point I've made over the years is, when we've seen these in the past, that it does take 5 to 7 years before we get back to what people would really describe as a normal economic environment, which would be somewhat stronger growth globally, and it would also be a reset to somewhat higher interest rates generally. Well, if we take the end of 2008, so we're just talking about 2009 to 2013, which we're now in, we are beyond the first quarter, or ending the first quarter rather, of the 5th year. And as I say, it takes 5 to 7 on average before you get back to what people would call normalcy in terms of economic activity. So that says that the leash in terms of a favorable environment here for the global bond market, which certainly was given an extension by the credit crisis recession, but don't expect that to go on indefinitely. I think I've made that point sufficiently. So let's look at some of the other areas. Commodities. Commodities are certainly not providing significant upward pressure here, which is good news in terms of the GDP growth story. Veteran subscribers will recall that I've often mentioned that when we get spikes in crude oil, that's a game changer. It's the most important commodity in the world, and it is huge, has a huge influence on stock markets. The last big spike, for example, in the crude oil price was in 2007, and that had more to do with the overall downward trend than most people realize, because most of the commentary focused, understandably, on the banking problems, but the crude oil price was a major factor as well. But we don't have that type of upward pressure here right now. Industrial commodities are soft generally, and we also have seen some respite in terms of the food price inflation. Now, that included today, and one of the big stories here today was that we did see a sharp downward move in the prices of wheat, corn, and soybeans in the USA, all down from 40 to 49, 49 cents. And there was a USDA report which said that basically that the overall situation was better than generally expected. And I think one big reason for that is that we've had a reasonable harvest. It's still going on in South America. We had a serious, just and justifiably so, drought concerns, particularly regarding Texas. And there's been a lot of snow here this spring. We certainly can't call that global warming. My God, there's a relevant digression here. I think in the UK, people have been saying that March has been the coldest month in 50 years. But so not global warming, but it does it is a symptom perhaps of climate change that we have experienced around the globe. And but the net result, though, of this additional of the snow is that it has considerably reduced the drought risk in the U.S. Great Plains region, and that's reflected in the prices that we see. Although we may well get off to a late spring planting, and there are all sorts of things that can go wrong during the crop cycle, but right now, food price inflation is not the problem that it has been in previous years, and that is very good news overall. Now, precious metals, the performance has been well, I'll put it this way: the overall upward trends that we had seen for 12 years have lost their consistency. And that's a big change. Clearly makes it harder to forecast. And it certainly, well, we know that the bull markets really ended about 18 months ago. And there's no evidence that they are about to resume overall. There is concern over supply. And I've mentioned the Paulson Fund before. I think that's the big one in terms of gold, but there are others as well. Now, we know that some people are buying gold, and we know that some governments are buying gold overall, but we do have that dead weight potentially overhanging the market, and that may be putting off investors who have been more interested in stock markets here overall. My feeling is that because the bull market has lost form overall, that doesn't automatically guarantee that we're going into a bear market. We might get several years of ranging overall. I think that the general softness of currencies, all the quantitative easing that's taking place, is supportive of gold on the longer term. I think that gold at today's price, it's currently at 15.6, beg your pardon, 15.96 in US dollars, is near the lower side of the range that we are likely to see. It can go a little lower, of course, but I don't think that there's a, I'm trying to say that I don't think that there's a big downside risk in gold, but equally, I would be cautious about the upside forecast in here. I think that there's probably more medium-term upside than downside, but it's a tricky call right now, and it's nowhere near as interesting as as the stock markets. Now, in terms of crude oil, we're range-bound, a little bit steadier in those ranges this week. But there's no serious upward pressure to be overly concerned about. And that's a favorable overall background. In terms of currency activity, U.S. dollar is very firm overall. It's down a little bit in here today, given the rallies that we saw in some of the stock markets, including a bit of a recovery in Europe today, and also the strength in the Americas markets. But so we still have this steady dollar. Now, in the past, the dollar has mainly, in the past recent years, I should say, the dollar has been mainly firm when global fear has been rising, and we've seen a bit of that really over the last couple of months, and that has certainly helped the U.S. dollar overall. But I think there's another factor in there that's coming into play, and that is that the U.S. economy is doing well among the big industrialized economies. And one of the two principal reasons for that is the USA's strong technology position. And part of that technology, of course, has been the breakthrough in fracking, which the US developed to tap the shale and oil and gas reserves in the United States. And the USA's energy advantage is unique among big industrialized economies, and that's a story that's going to run and run. I mean, other countries can catch up, but they are slow to adopt the fracking technology overall. Okay, now also I was talking about that as being a support factor for the U.S. dollar generally, although we're still in a big overall range, so I don't expect the dollar to go all that much higher here. I think probably we will have a reasonably quiet environment in currencies. In terms of weakness, I would expect the yen to weaken further, and that's an intentional devaluation policy. And I think also the Eurozone's suspect or suspect economic outlook is going to cause the euro to be a soft currency here generally, possibly also sterling, although speaking in terms of my own personal interests, I hope not too much. Now, but I don't think there's going to be, beyond those currencies that I mentioned, particularly the soft yen, I think we can bank on that, and probably a soft euro overall. I don't think there's going to be all that much drama. Dangerous words, but tempting fate. But that's my view. Now, let's look at the longer term outlook in terms of where we are in the cycle. And my view, which I've mentioned before, is that we're very much in the latter stages of this whole valuation contraction cycle that Fuller Money has been talking about for a number of years now. The best comparison is with what happened in the last valuation contraction cycle. And to look at those charts of Wall Street, look at them on a 50-year chart in the library. And it's an interesting picture here overall. I began my career in the late middle to late 1960s, my financial career, and stock markets had done nothing but go up, and that was just the beginning of that valuation contraction cycle, and we didn't get into the next secular bull market until 1982, so it was quite a steep learning curve, and we had a couple of quite substantial bear markets during that period, particularly in the 73-74 period. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if we get something reasonably close to that, and what I would think we will, what I think we will probably see is a ranging phase for stock markets, but for most of them at the higher side of their ranges overall. When I say for most of them, Europe, suspect economic outlook, to put it mildly, so Europe may underperform unless Mario Draghi and others there can increase confidence here once again. But let's talk here really in terms of the US, which I think will remain the big influence among stock markets. I expect the S&P to go through to a new all-time high, and then I wouldn't be surprised if we saw, and this is analytical guesswork, but I think it's justified on the basis of previous history and the overall economic outlook. Wouldn't be surprised if we go into a ranging phase, possibly for a few years. Now, if that happens, inevitably some stock markets will be stronger, perhaps ASEAN, and some will be weaker, as Europe, as I've already cited. But that sideways ranging phase would allow valuations to improve once again. And one of the reasons for that, of course, is that corporate earnings, particularly if you look at the autonomies, which is our favorite global sector by far, those companies are doing very well. They have, for the most part, they have lots of cash. And they've been very disciplined, and I think that and they've had the share buybacks. They've cut a lot of fat. Cutting fat among those companies often means letting people go, and that of course creates problems for governments. But the corporations are largely exempt from those problems overall, though we may see some attempts to increase taxation on corporations, but that hasn't happened yet, and I don't think that will be a too big a problem going forward. But what I want to emphasize is that one of the biggest mistakes that forecasters have made over the last few years is to say, well, I don't like the economy, therefore I don't like the stock market. But corporations have really whipped themselves into shape and have done very well. And most of them hold far more cash than they have for a number of years. And their earnings are not bad, and they're also going to benefit from five factors that I'm going to mention to you, which I think will help fuel the next secular bull market. So that's my outlook. I'm seeing perhaps Wall Street getting a few years of ranging, no bear market, but of consequence if we do get a bear market during that phase. And I'm concerned about, for instance, the end of the quantitative easing. Some analysts are saying, well, that'll be a relatively benign influence. I think that's too optimistic. Hopefully, it's not a disaster. I don't think it will be a disaster, but it'll cause some uncertainty inevitably, and that will unsettle stock markets overall. But so that would allow for some ranging time. But then there are five factors that, as I say, I think will fuel this next secular bull market, and secular bull markets have always followed these lengthy valuation contraction periods. The first one, and the most important by far, is the accelerated rate of technical innovation. And my Austrian economics friends and subscribers will be highly skeptical about this. I think this is a very exciting and hugely bullish factor. The rate of technological innovation is in an acceleration phase. That creates some problems for particularly for technology companies, which lose their lead position, and also for companies that are slow to adapt the new technologies. But overall, it's a hugely bullish opportunity, and corporations will benefit from it most of all. And if you're at all uncertain about whether we are seeing an accelerated rate of technological innovation, just look at what's happened during the course of your lifetime and how the rate of innovation has increased during the course of your lifetime. Well, it's going to go on doing that, and I think that the increases will be exponential. Now, second point I would mention is recovering global economies. Now, I mentioned it takes from 5 to 7 years following those credit crisis recessions. We're one quarter into the fifth year so far this time around. We have a massive monetary tailwind that should help over the medium term. And we are likely to see, I think, a normalization in terms of economic activity in the years ahead. Growth will probably pick up quite slowly over the next couple of years or so, but it will improve over the medium to longer term. And here are some of the reasons why it will improve in addition to the accelerated rate of technological innovation. My third point would be the increasing acceptance of capitalism. Well, that's a given. We see that on pretty much on a worldwide basis. That was certainly not the case back in 1982 when the last secular bull market was beginning. And there, at that time, we had plenty of way underperforming regions of the globe. In fact, most of them were. The capitalists were in North America, Australia, a watered-down version in Europe, but communist economic policies were dominant in Eastern Europe and also in Asia. Japan accepted, Hong Kong accepted. Now, the but this increasing acceptance of capitalism at a time when populations are larger, I think opens the door to terrific growth in the size of the global middle class. And that's been, of course, a huge bullish story in terms of many of the retailing companies in recent years. And the fourth factor that I mentioned is cheaper energy in real terms. And that is a debatable forecast overall, but it's one that I've been predicting for a number of years. And the reasons for that, I think the biggest factor of all is the development of the fracking ability, so successfully exploited by the United States. And that will be taken up by more countries in the years ahead, although many of them have been slow to do so to date, really to the USA's advantage. But we also have the subsidized so-called green energy, renewable forms of energy production, of which solar is by far the most effective, provided you've got enough sunshine. And these are all contributing. And we will also see this accelerated rate of technological innovation increase the ability to extract oil and gas from around the world. And it may well lead to other forms of energy generation over the years ahead. A fifth factor, the last factor I'm going to mention in this summary, is better corporate governance. Now, that's a given, and it really happened following the wake-up call in 2000 and after 2008. And so corporations have slimmed down. They've become much more efficient. They've cut out a lot of waste. They've built up their cash reserves. They're very focused on long-term growth. We've seen that trend, and it's reflected by stock market valuations here today. And it's a story that can run and run. So who will do best in this global super cycle? Well, I think it's the early leaders that you see today, and that'll be parts of Asia. And probably including, there's a real chance that Japan could be participating in that. I also think China, after it gets past its medium-term problems, will be a major player. The ASEAN countries, which I've just mentioned, the United States, for sure, will be a very big player in this cycle overall. Europe will be lagging, hopefully not by too much, but the perennial problem exists. How does Europe generate growth with its current economic systems? And but another a former disaster area becoming a bright spot, Africa. And we're seeing some good growth rates generated in Africa. So just very quickly, those five factors: accelerated rate of technological innovation, two, recovering global economies over the medium to longer term in the background of increased acceptance of capitalism operating out of all major countries and most countries generally. Cheaper energy in real terms, that's one of the more debatable points that I've made, but one that I will certainly stick with, and also the better corporate governance overall. And on that note, I will finish and just wish you a very relaxing Easter weekend holiday. All the best.